mostly absorbed by a relatively nominal increase.
Well, I think in my testimony, I pointed out that the rates that exist in basic service are, by today's standards, bargains. And if you consider the cost of living index over the past several years since 1950, it would have, if those rates had followed that cost of living index, they could have been easily 3 and 4 times what they are today. I think nominal in my definition today would mean to bring rates up to a more normal, comparable basis.
Lastly, Mr. Chairman, if I might, you suggest that targeted subsidies may be considered. What is a targeted subsidy as far as ATT is concerned?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind there is, I know you folks have talked about a lifeline. I know Commissioner Weatherly gave you considerable testimony on that, and that would be a what we would call a targeted subsidy to keep people on the network. That's the kind of example I was referring to. Beyond that, I don't have any ideas right at the top of my mind, but those are ideas that are worth exploring.
Lastly, Mr. Chairman, this isn't a question but a statement. I guess I have to say that you say you understand, you'd like us to understand that ATT is in urgent need of immediate relief. I guess I have to tell you that I don't understand that. I'm of the opinion that ATT is not, in fact, in urgent need of immediate relief. On the contrary, ATT is doing very well. And while I don't argue that from the standpoint that a review of the subsidy is in order, for you to suggest that you're in immediate need of urgent relief, I think your choice of words.
Representative Pinell Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tyree, what do you think of Judge Harold Green?
I'd like to avoid that one if I could.
Sure. I want to follow up on what the Representative Thompson was just talking about a little bit. The $87 million subsidy, who's paying for it? If you were to be relieved of that immediately, would we see an $87 million increase in the bottom line of your books? Or but is AT&T paying for it out of their profits? Or are the ratepayers in the lower 48 subsidizing the Alaska Traffic? There's a difference there, isn't there?
Yes, there is. I think we're a regulated company also, so we can only earn so much. And assuming we're earning what we're allowed to earn, then you'd have to say that the $87 million comes out of the pocketbooks of our customers. And that if we were not paying that $87 million, that we could reduce rates to our customers in the lower 48 and become more competitive with our competitors. We have some 400 competitors in the lower 48.
Okay, I would just suggest to the people who are involved in the joint board that it seems to me that that's a question or an issue worth a little bit more study as to just who is going to be relieved. We're going to be picking up the tab through increased telephone bills in this state, and really, who is going to benefit? Is it going to be the local exchange carriers in the lower 48, the lower 48 subscribers, AT&T, Alaska? I don't know, but I think it's worthy of some study, and we're not going to answer that here today. I was trying to track, when you were going through your statement, and I reviewed it very quickly earlier, and it's very difficult, please understand, to assimilate numbers and facts so quickly, but I was trying to track your numbers with the numbers that were on the chart that Mr. Shaganaw had on the screen earlier. Do your numbers agree with his? He showed us the chart. I don't know if you can see this. It says 1985 AT&T direct MTS watts Alaska cost.
My numbers do agree with those, and I didn't find anything about the Alascom numbers that I would argue with. I found on their very last chart one number that I think there's an error in. I didn't follow those numbers. But other than that, all of the bar charts that he shows there, I agree with.
Where is your $40 million? You kept talking about that $40 million worth of charges.
that $40 million is, you see the $128 million there that says Alaska's cost?
The 120, Alaska Network settlements?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. That $40 million is part of that 128. And that $40 million is used to offset the cost of intrastate toll services. And that agrees with what Mr. Chaganol said also, that he assigns more of his cost because of this separations process to the interstate arena than to the intrastate arena.
Okay. What I'm wondering, and these are elementary questions, I must have to apologize for asking them, but these lower 48 network and access costs, LEC, which they've listed as $64 million, and I guess you agree with that number, it seems to me that telephone communication being two ways, that some of those costs must be attributable to the other end. And how was it determined that the $64 million for this particular number is all attributable to Alaska? What, how do we figure out what part the lower 48 ought to bear?
Well, we know the minutes of use. We know how many minutes of telephone traffic from Alaska terminated in the lower 48. We know how many minutes of traffic originated in the lower 48 and terminated in Alaska. And from those minutes of use, you can use some average cost figures. For instance, we know what the average cost is for all of the 1,500 local exchange carriers in the lower 48 for their access charges. We know what that average cost is, and we can apply it to the minutes. We also know what the average cost is per minute for the AT&T transport of that traffic around the lower 48 and across the lower 48. So applying those average numbers to the minutes, that's how we derive those costs.
If I may continue with one change in direction here, and, I think I'll have to, ask the Alaskan people to cover their ears. They're not going to want to even hear the question, but. They indicated they've got a $400 million net book investment left in the state, and that here we are. We've got some level of operating costs annually here to carry on telecommunications within the state that we're not paying our own way for, and it's been suggested, that we're going to have to come up with about another $100 million or so a year from one source or another. So if you were just coming into this situation, Colton, we could take Alaska's investment and just forget about it. It's all paid off. They made their return on investment. They all went to the telecommunications heaven in the sky. What would you suggest that we should do to have the most cost-efficient, state-of-the-art telecommunications system for the state of Alaska? What do you think it would cost? Are we talking about a $100 million investment, $200 million, $10 billion? I mean, this is somewhat of an unfair question. It's subjective, but I'd like to hear somebody that, with your experience, to tell us about that.
Well, that question is very tough to answer. You're asking, starting with a desert scenario with nothing in place, what would we do today? And I'm sure there are technologies available today that we could start over with that probably could put the same network in place at a lower cost than what the network costs today. But that, in all fairness, is pie in the sky. You can't start that way. We have an embedded network, and it is one. I don't necessarily think the house needs to be torn down and rebuilt. I think it just needs some remodeling. I see hope in this. I don't see despair in this whole thing. I think that Mr. Chaganol talked about rate design, and I think there is plenty of room within the situation as it exists today for Alaskans to help Alaskans. And I think we can do that through rate design and other measures like that.
Okay. Not to belabor this, but you see, if we're going to have to pick up another $100 million a year, in 2 years, $200 million is enough to put up a bunch of satellites and a bunch of earth stations. And if that was the best technology available, I was just wondering whether or not you had any view on whether we could have, pay Alaskom, pay the existing owners of the infrastructure off and put a new system up, and wouldn't we be ahead of the game? I know that's a little.
My vision does not say that you'd necessarily be ahead of the game that much. Now, I am not a technologist. but my vision is not very clear when you start discussing those types of ideas.
Okay. Last question, if I may, Mr. Chairman, is where does AT&T really want to get to with this subsidy question? You want to be relieved of the $87, $89 million. Is it your expectation that the joint board, and are you going to ask the joint board to totally relieve you of all $89 million, or are you willing to stay in the game up here for half of that, or a quarter of that, or two-thirds of that?
Well, again, that's a tough question to deal with. We're interested in, number one, integrating rates and relieving ourselves of that $15 million transitional supplement. Secondly, we'd like to see intrastate services stand on their own 2 feet. That's another $40 million. Those would be two big steps right there. Then thirdly, the additional loss that we incur, we think there is some possibilities, as I mentioned in my testimony, whereby we could operate in this state very similar to the way we operate in the lower 48 states and have those costs between the major switching, long-distance switching centers, Juneau, Fairbanks, Anchorage, those costs out to the rural communities included under some sort of cost pool that we would, under some sort of tariff that we could subscribe to just like any other long-distance competitor could if they wanted to come into the state and establish a presence. That vision is a little bit hazy right now as just exactly how that's going to work and how that could work to relieve us, but we're interested in exploring that, and I'm sure as we go through this joint board proceeding, there will be other ideas that will come out that will even define that idea even more.
Lastly, Mr. Chairman, a question to you. Is it your intention to have the minutes of this meeting transcribed in their entirety or to summarize them?
Whatever your wishes are.
Well, whatever your plan is, I would like to just have this question and answer transcribed in its entirety.
That can be accomplished. Representative Cohn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess as I sit here and listen to all this information, I'm a real novice, and the reason that I came on the committee is because I'm very interested in telecommunications and excited about the potential for technology. But it seems to me that our real problem is that it costs so much to provide the telephone services in Alaska. And I guess my question to you is, why does it cost so much? The figures we had the other day were that it was $200 to maintain a line in the lower 48 states, $1,200 in Anchorage, and over $30,000 in the rural areas. And as hard as I try, I cannot understand why that disparity is so great. Perhaps you could explain that to me.
Representative Collins, I'll give it my best shot. The numbers, I'd been told that I might get a question about those numbers that were quoted the other day, and those numbers did come out of an AT&T filing in front of the FCC in March of 1984. However, there was a footnote at the bottom of our page in which we used those numbers that referenced the fact that we took those numbers from a FCC commission opinion that had been issued in 1982. And from there, I didn't research any further to see where the FCC had gotten their numbers, but I have to believe that they ultimately got their numbers from somebody in Alaska. Now, the numbers actually used was the number of 296, the number of 1,083, and then 32,618. And those numbers represent the toll revenue requirement per main station, long distance revenue requirement. Now, the local exchange companies. Now, the local exchange companies do not get all their revenue from flat rates. They get a good portion of it from the costs that they assign to intrastate long distance and interstate long distance, as Mr. Chaganol demonstrated. And what the numbers seem to say to me is that in the lower 48, on average, the local exchange carriers get $296 per access line or per main station from toll revenue requirements, and that keeps their basic rates lower. The numbers seem to suggest to me that that in Anchorage, the company there gets $1,083 from toll revenue requirements that keeps their rates lower. And I can't attest to the validity of these numbers. It's just that they've been published and we used them from a document. Now, when you get to the $32,000 number, I think we're now into apples and oranges. I think that number has to be more than just the local company's costs or revenue requirements out in the bush or rural areas. I think that also has to include the Alascom costs. And I think it's an overall cost from the rural location or the bush location all the way into the major long-distance switching center, which would either be Fairbanks or Anchorage. So I think that last number in my mind is probably a little bit of apples and oranges. And keep in mind, Representative Collins, we all learn too as we go along. This is a very complex issue. And I think I can be fair and say that all of us are learning as we move forward in this thing.
I had several questions, and I'd like to get my mind. What are the total supplements paid in Alaska by AT&T, and to whom are they paid?
Okay, the toll supplements. Okay. Chairman Boucher, I think, again, you're asking about the $15 million transitional supplement and the $40 million toll supplement that Interstate pays of intrastate costs. And those payments are made to Alascom for the benefit of reducing intrastate costs, intrastate revenue requirements, intrastate rates. Now, in addition, I might point out to you that there's some other subsidy that comes to Alaska also. You folks have asked about how to get all these numbers in relation to each other. And it's very difficult to do when you're dealing with the years 83, 84, and 85. And the reason it's difficult to do is that 83 was an apple, 84 was an apple, and half apple, half orange, 85 was all of an orange. From the numbers Mr. Chaganaw used, you saw that in 83, the local exchange carriers in Alaska charged us $96 million to originate and terminate our interstate long-distance calls. In 1984, that number went down significantly to about $78, $79 million. And in 1985, it went down, and you saw it on Mr. Chaganaw's chart, to $46 million. Now, why the big change? It's because the FCC implemented access charges. There were no access charges in 1983. In 1984, we had a half a year of access charges and a half a year of cost-based settlements. And in 1985, we had a full year of access charges. The National Exchange Carrier Association has a mandatory pool in which they have a flat rate for all non-traffic sensitive costs. And so the local exchange carriers in 1985 in Alaska not only charged us $46 million, but they got another $50 million from the National Exchange Carrier Association. That $50 million also represents a subsidy to Alaska. We're not complaining, incidentally, about that subsidy. We're not complaining about the NECA pools or the NECA arrangements. But you should recognize that there's also an additional subsidy coming to the state from the National Exchange Carrier Association. And AT&T contributes the majority of that subsidy.
One question I have, and it may be a little bit confusing, is there a subsidy paid to GCI?
Not on a direct basis for the purpose of reducing their costs in another jurisdictional arena, no. We have a connecting carrier arrangement with GCI so that we do terminate their traffic to the lower 48, use our network to terminate their traffic in the lower 48. And that's a special arrangement that we've agreed to under contract with them.
Well, how did that special arrangement come about? In other words, are we shifting dollars? In other words, there's no monetary benefit to GCI through this arrangement then? It takes out of, that would reduce the subsidy to Alaska. In other words, I don't quite understand how.
I don't see a connection between the arrangement we have with GCI and the connection we have with Alascom.
Okay.
GCI operates with us very much like our other 400 competitors in the lower 48. Many of our competitors come to us and lease or buy facilities from us to terminate their calls. And that's what GCI has done. Our arrangement with Alaskom is significantly different than it is with our other 400 connecting carrier or common carriers in the U.S. We are under mandate from the FCC to operate with Alaskom for terminating and originating the traffic that they carry out of Alaska or into Alaska in the lower 48. That's by order of the FCC. And we're locked in to that cost-plus arrangement with Alaskom.
But you're not locked in with GCI?
No, sir. We negotiated our arrangement with GCI.
Was there an antitrust suit that GCI had?
There was.
Back when it was negotiated?
Yes, it was. It was earlier in 1985. It was the arrangement we have with them now was in settlement of an antitrust suit that they had brought against us.
Okay. We talked about, I think one of the things that's a great concern, and Representative Pinellberry and the others have expressed it, you know, we're still a growing state, providing a major portion of our oil reserves to the country, so it just isn't 500,000 people stuck up on the across the border from Russia. And it concerns me that a company that has had so much involvement in the entire communication would say, hey, 1986 is it. You know, that's who is going to pick up this $100 million. We can shuffle money around and make nominal changes. But to me, we got, I think it's 170,000 unique telephones out there. And 170,000, is that correct? About the latest figures. And 170,000 unique or individual numbers divided by $100 million equal a lot of money to me. And I don't know. Yeah, 189,523 unique telephone numbers in 83. And I'm just wondering, we talked about Target, such as Lifeline, and that's good to know. But I'm talking about, you know, if 86 is it, and it would appear to be it, how much of the support is AT&T willing to pay?
Well, your question kind of assumes that there is not room in the present rate schedules for Alaskans to help Alaskans. And as I've said in my testimony, I believe there is. But beyond that, I will only say this, that AT&T has been a reasonable company. I think we've demonstrated that over the years. And secondly, AT&T is interested in rural areas. We have never abandoned one, ever.
Okay.
And we're not planning to abandon Alaska. We do need to remodel this house, though. I'm going to say again, this house isn't falling down. It doesn't need to be tore down and rebuilt. It needs to be remodeled. And I think people with an interest in doing that can put their minds together and figure out a way out of this.
Does AT&T plan a point of presence in Alaska?
No, we don't. We're at this point, as I said earlier, we're precluded from doing that by order of the FCC. We are ordered to all the traffic that originates in our network headed for Alaska, we're ordered to terminate that traffic through our arrangement with Alaska.
Where do you terminate that?
We interconnect with Alaskom in three different places. We interconnect with Alaskom in two places in California and one place in Washington. We do not have plans at this point to have a point of presence for the message network in Alaska. Flexibility in our arrangements with Alaskom might be helpful in the future. But at this point, by order of the FCC, we're precluded from making any different arrangements.
Suppose the FCC order was changed?
That's a different ballgame, which I'm not in a position to speak to at this point.
Representative Pinellberry?
Mr. Chairman, you've stimulated my thinking a little bit, and I want to ask another question of Mr. Tyree. I think what I gleaned from your answer to the chairman's question is that you have no assets in Alaska to speak of. There's no physical plant. You don't pay property taxes anywhere.
Not for the interstate long-distance network, no.
Of any kind at all?
No, I think our equipment portion of the company has a sales office up here, and I think we may be selling some terminal gear like telephones up here. But as far as long-distance switching equipment and facilities, no. We have no investment in the state.
Okay, so if you were to be totally relieved of subsidy for Alaskan traffic, would you be able to shed some assets and switching centers or some investment that you have at one of those three pickup points in the lower 48, the two in California, the one in Washington? And would we be, are we causing you to pick up some extra capital expense for you to pick up the Alaska traffic? If we, well, I'm not saying this very well, but if you were relieved of the subsidy, would it enable you to lower your investment base at one of those three centers? I guess I can't say it any simpler than that.
We're always working at lowering our costs of both expenses and investment. There is a possibility that as we move forward, we can lower the cost of...
I want to be very specific. What I'm really driving at, Mr. Tyree, is do you have some dedicated piece of equipment for Alaska traffic, or is it just that you handle the Alaska traffic as an increment, in a small increment of your overall traffic through those switching centers?
There is not... I'm trying very hard to respond to your question, and I'm thinking here as I'm talking about the network. The locations in which we connect with Alaskom, those locations are not solely built and used just for connection with Alaskom. The satellites that we have up that we use for some of that traffic is not solely used for providing Alaska traffic. So the interstate investment, I can't in my mind anyway at the moment think of a single piece that is dedicated totally of our investment that's dedicated totally to working with Alaska. Alaskom, however, has interstate investment which is used solely for interstate traffic. And they have, I'm sure, facilities that's used just for interstate and nothing else. And the cost of those facilities was borne by AT&T.
The cost of Alaskom's facility?
Interstate.
Okay. Let's think about that.
As I said, the arrangement that AT&T has with Alaskom is it's a cost-plus arrangement. They are a supplier for this end of the service that we interconnect with.
I have one further question that probably is, and we really appreciate your patience. I'm sure that our level of awareness is growing rapidly.
Mine is too, sir.
But I think one of the things that kind of concern me is we tend to lump Anchorage, and Commissioner Weatherly touched on this, the concept. Is this your first trip to Alaska, sir?
No, I've been here before.
All right. Well, there's a tendency to lump Alaska close to Anchorage or the other populated areas. And I recall back in the days when Governor Egan, I served as a lieutenant governor, mandated that every community, that 25 or more people began to have telephone service. And the case was brought up, I believe it was Commissioner Weatherly, who talked about the glitch that was created in the world fish market because the telephones went down in Bethel. You know, and I there is a tendency to just put Alaska and measure it in size, not in resources. So I hope as AT&T looks at this, that the bottom line, which concerns your stockholders, is understandably of great concern. I'm sure Alaskom and the other people, GCI, the bottom line, you're in business to make a profit. But when one thinks of it, I don't think you can lump just outside of Anchorage. The area is a fifth of the United States. We talk about Wichita, where Anchorage is, and we're talking about southeastern Savannah, Georgia, and the tip of the Aleutians is San Diego, and the northern part's up in Bearsville, where the Bears are going to be, Chicago Bears are from. And so if we begin to move out the supply anatubic password service in this, we're talking, I think, more about a nominal. We are struggling here with a resident hire. And around Anchorage, why, it's pretty close, but there are some areas where it's 25 to 40%, so there is a great disparity. And one thing that wouldn't be stood for in Alaska on this floor is for portions of Alaska, simply because there are only 50 or 100 people, to go dark, as Commissioner Weatherly. So I think, and I hope, as the board looks at it, that we are unique. I know people probably in Washington are tired of hearing that, and maybe other, but we make a unique contribution to the country with our resources. And there are 500,000 people scattered over a fifth the size of the United States. So the temptation may be to lump them close to the majority live near Anchorage. Well, the majority may live there, but out in many parts are what makes this majority live there. So I guess, as chairman, as our level increases, I want to make sure that thought is imparted through you. And we know that your stockholders probably want to get this $100 million off their back, but we sincerely hope that the guillotine isn't going to fall at the end of this year. And if we do nothing more within this body, our role is to inform our fellow representatives. We know that the executive branch is already taking a lead role on this, because it may be partially our responsibility to assume some of this burden, and it needs to be done in an intelligent and informed manner. Burdens assumed by the broader tax base are not unique. Currently in the state of Alaska, I think there is an energy subsidy, which does create quite a bit of controversy, to the tune of something around, what is it, $25 million? Well, it looks like we're talking about a bit more than $25 million in the area of communication, so we need to be aware of that, ahead of time. And if there's no further questions, sir,
if I may, I recognize what you've said. I would just emphasize that I think the subsidy burden impacts our customers more than it does our stockholders. We do operate in a very competitive market, and even though Representative Thompson said we're doing nicely, and we are losing market share every day in that competitive environment. So that's why we find this subsidy burden to be onerous. It just doesn't jive very well with the competitive environment. And as I said in my testimony, I do think there is room for Alaskans to help Alaskans. I think there's room for repricing, and I think certain ratepayers here in Alaska are getting a bargain at the moment. And so I see that, from my perspective, there is room to relieve AT&T of this subsidy burden.
Thank you very much, sir. We have Mr. Weatherly. Are you still online with us? And is Washington in a talk-only status or listen-only status?
They're coming back to the San Francisco convention.
There's a blip in the satellite. We are offline currently. Is that?
We're online. Anchorage has it.
Commissioner Weatherly, were you able to hear most of the testimony?
This bill is Danny.
This is Danny Bell.
We have Anchorage back online.
Anchorage is going online right now.
Uh, Anchorage, Commissioner Weatherly, I don't know if you heard most of the testimony from Alascom and AT&T. Are there any comments that you would care to add?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. With the exception of the last part of Mr. Tyree's comments, I did hear testimony of both Alascom and AT&T. Alascom's testimony, I think, it gives you the perspective of the magnitude of the dollars that we're talking about under consideration on what happens with the joint board. And I believe that AT&T probably incurs those costs. Also, the figures that quoted by Mr. Shaganoff, the rate of growth with regards to the exchange is 114 in 1980 to 221 here in the beginning of 1986, I think is significant on the activity that has taken place in providing universal telephone service to most Alaskans. Representative Thompson raised an interesting question with regards to Alaskan, I guess to any regulated entity, with regards to the cost of doing business. And Alaskan's response was the fact that they are regulated, their books are open. As far as the ATUC is concerned, it's really a matter of dollars. If you give us the staff and the personnel, and we can oversee anyone. But if you do a number on this, as you did last year, and the current budget reductions, I doubt very much that we're going to be able to do much of a monitoring job on Alaskan's cost or anyone else's cost. With regards to bypass, Representative Collins raises a concern that is felt not only here in Alaska by regulators, but very heavily in the lower 48 and the FCC with regards to bypass. Bypass is a very, very big problem. One bypass that has not been noted, I believe I noted in comments earlier, is that of arbitrage, where an interstate competitor will route traffic through their interstate network, in effect, which is intrastate traffic, and that basically is also a form of bypass. That's happening not only here, but also in the lower 48. The oil companies up on the slope, with regards to Representative McAlberry's questions on getting data and doing a study on that, I happen to be the lead commissioner on a docket that the ATUC had back in, I believe, 1978 or 1979, dealing with ATU. And we had a full-blown hearing in that particular matter, and we found indeed the oil companies on the North Slope were bypassing the network, and which prompted ATU, and the only telephone company in Alaska to do it, to implement what is known as an ESIS charge tariff, which basically compensated the telephone utility for toll bypass. And it was very successful, I believe, anyway. They took us to court when we approved the tariff, and I believe they dropped the court case by now as being a lost cause. But the testimony and the data in that particular proceeding, I think, would be very representative of the amount of bypass that is attributed to the oil companies. At least on an intrastate basis, and possibly an interstate basis, and it is very, very significant indeed. In fact, one oil company executive said, "Hey, one of the benefits we give our people up on the slope is being able to call home." Well, they don't call home on the public network; they call home via the private line circuits of Arco or Ohio, or whatever the case may be. In other words, you pick up a phone on Pluto Bay, you can access. Dial tone here in Anchorage, and you paid no contribution to the toll charge. With regards to ATT and my friend Lee Tyree, in the regulatory scheme of things, much of what Mr. Tyree said would be termed, I believe the Supreme Court termed it bold assertion. With regards to there's a lot of room for assuming this burden, whether it's $100 million or $40 million or $150 million on the intrastate side. He talked about we have low intrastate costs. The key in there was the intrastate toll cost. The key in there is with regards to the low out of the areas in the lower 48. But I suggest to you on an interstate basis, if you look at the rates on comparable mileage bands that you have in Alaska, take a look at Texas and some of the other places that have the longer hauls, I think that my statement before that Alaska suffers from the largest toll rate disparity intrastate will stand. I do agree with Mr. Tyree with regards to the question of, he used the word remodeling. When I testified before you, I used the word restructuring. It may come a point in time that the legislature, the executive, the ATUC, the SEC, and all of the parties involved in this thing take a look at this whole question with regards to Alaska as a matter of restructuring. How do we get the best system, the most technologically advanced system, and I'm not saying that we don't have it right now, but if, suppose you want to optimize the system, then you must optimize the system in looking at it in its entirety. It goes back to my illustration earlier. Do you want a system that's been designed by a committee? And I suggest to you that is not the way of doing it. But I think that we can look at the total system of providing telecommunications to the state of Alaska both on an intra and interstate basis and optimize it and give us the advantage of the best of all worlds. ATT, Mr. Tyree, very adroitly passed off or laid off the $32,000 figure and the $1,200 or $1,000 figure, the $200 figure to an FCC and then to the state of Alaska. I don't recall the state of Alaska ever filing those numbers with the FCC. And I'm sure that if the FCC used those numbers, they probably got them from ATT because they really benefited ATT's case. Surely the state of Alaska is not going to be making that argument. But anyway, those are the... Mr. Chairman, with regards to your questions on GCI and the arrangement that ATT has with GCI, yes, there is an advantage to GCI. It's a pricing advantage, whether you want to call it a direct subsidy or what have you. The filings that are in court before the SEC indicated there was a clear price advantage to GCI. What that equates to, I'm not quite sure.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Last week we had Barrow online, Ken Donnelly, that indicated that he wanted to testify, and then Valdez, Dean Moore. We've already heard from Sand Point, and then Maggie Schneider in Wasilla. Are any of you folks out there today?
This is Lacey and Barrow. Ken Donnelly is not here. He may be here on Thursday.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Weatherly. We will be back on Thursday at 9 p.m. And at that time, or rather 9 a.m., excuse me. And we'll have the pleasure of hearing from Mr. Ron Duncan from GCI. And then we're going to afford an opportunity in the last hour for any wrap-up comments, and this will conclude this particular phase of hearing, which primarily has focused on the impact of AT&T divestiture and its effect on the state of Alaska. So if there are no other questions or comments, the House Special Committee on Telecommunication will adjourn at 11:25 on January 21st. I would like to once again express the appreciation of the committee, Representative Collins and the others who have attended, to my staff, Roger Poppy and Chris Herberger, because indeed we are newcomers, strangers in a strange land, a land of rapidly changing technology, and we appreciate AT&T taking the time to come here and Mr. Shaganaw, our appreciations to Alaskom for taking the time, and be assured that the major role that this committee is playing is not that one of an inquisitor or an adversary role. It is simply a vehicle to inform our legislative body as to what is taking place, because there is no doubt in my mind that we are going to be dealing with it in some form or other within the, maybe not this session, but certainly in the sessions that confront us. So we look forward to the spirit of cooperation. Washington, I hope that you have been on a line. If our Mr. Katz or anybody else has any comments that they would like to add to the hearings, please feel free to do so. The meeting is adjourned.